You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. The stands, they were called during the Afghanistan conflict of these last decades. They are not the stands. They are separate countries that were under the boot of the Soviet Union for much of the 20th century. But now I welcome Kamran Bokhari, Director of Analytical Development at the New Lines Institute for Strategy and Policy in Washington, D.C., writing most recently at Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site about Central Asia. And the metaphor that Kamran uses is uncharted territory. Kamran, uncharted, tabula rasa, completely new. Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan has the largest population. Kazakhstan has the largest economy. Tajikistan, bordering on Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Turkmenistan, a mystery to me on the Caspian Sea Basin. Right now, who has the strongest influence? Moscow, Beijing, Washington, Delhi. Who is influential in these five states? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think right now it's safe to say that there is shared influence. Moscow's influence is not what it used to be, especially not after the war in Ukraine. Moscow's influence was, waning well before that. But I think that now the Ukraine war has drained the Kremlin of its ability to both fight on its strategic front yard and deal with its strategic rear. As for China, China has its own problems, as they became all the more evident with what happened in the 20th Party Congress with that drama of removing former President Hu Jintao so publicly. So there's enough problems there in China, not to mention the economic problems. And then, of course, China is not nowhere near even the kind of military power that Russia is. China does have a lot of cash. It has tried to extend the tentacles of its BRI project, the Belt and Road Initiative, into Kazakhstan. But let's just say that for now, it's just barely scratching the surface. The United States for the past 30 years has been on and off trying to develop a sphere of influence in Central Asia. Significant progress was made during the 90s, but then we got mired into the wars in Middle East and South Asia and couldn't pay as much attention to this newly opened up frontier in Central Asia. Then everybody else is a secondary power. India is sort of double blocked from Central Asia, because it borders Pakistan, and then you have to cross Afghanistan in order to be able to get into Central Asia. India is trying to use Iran as a launch pad to project influence into Central Asia. That's not going anywhere anytime soon because of the sanctions on Iran. But the one power that we need to watch carefully is Turkey. Turkey has ensconced itself in the South Caucasus, especially after the war between Azerbaijan and Armenia in 2020, and is looking at that as a jumping-off point to project influence into Central Asia. It's still a bridge too long or too far, but I think Turkey needs to be watched carefully.
Yes. Now, what is the point of view in these countries, especially Kazakhstan? You mentioned President Tokayev. There's reason to believe that Kazakhstan is both defiant towards Moscow and compliant towards Moscow. Can you choose?
I think you put it well, John. They have to do both. Russia is down, but not out. Russia is not what it used to be. So the Kazakhs have far greater freedom of movement, which is why they're already moving forward with developing energy export routes that do not traverse through Russian territory. They've been, you know, reaching out to the United States for a very long time to have more closer relations with the U.S. Unfortunately, the U.S. has not paid the attention that Central Asia deserves, particularly Kazakhstan. So while this is happening, if you're the Kazakhs, you don't jump the gun. You basically say, okay, you know, I like what's, you know, the freedom of movement because of Russia's weakening, but that doesn't mean I can ignore Russia. In the meantime, the Chinese, you know, I have a relationship with them. It's significant. And, you know, I have a long border with them, just like I have, well, you know, it's not nearly as big as the one with Russia, but still it's significant. And you engage in what that country has been calling the multi-vector foreign policy.
The area, the whole of the canvas, it's vast, a vast territory, is resource rich. China needs everything, especially energy, but it needs water, it needs food, the food of Uzbekistan. Is China in a position to pay for it? Not to dominate it, as the Belt and Road might have by lending money, but in doing business. I mention this because when visiting Tashkent, I saw a lot of Chinese products there, and that makes sense. It's not very far to the Chinese border. Does that relationship deepen and continue, especially now after you mentioned the 20th Party Congress, where it appears that China's turning inward?
Yes, John, I think that from an export capacity, being, you know, the largest exporter of goods on the planet, China can certainly do that. The whole BRI project was designed in great part to enable that export capability. Mind you that, the whole purpose of, spending tens of billions of dollars on BRI, and, you know, the chunk of which was spent in Pakistan, was to have an overland access to, you know, in other words, a trade superhighway, a modern-day Silk Road that runs from China, takes Chinese goods from Western China across to the Middle East and Europe and down through Pakistan onto the high seas and everywhere else. Those plans haven't materialized. But that doesn't mean that China will not have influence. It will. But we need to be mindful that all of these Chinese plans were predicated on the fact that the United States was dealing with Afghanistan. It was present in Afghanistan. It was making sure that anything and everything that negative that happens in Afghanistan stays in country, which therefore, you know, explains why the Chinese built everything around it. And now with the U.S. gone, Afghanistan is in turmoil. The Chinese are not so comfortable anymore, especially with their workers getting killed in Pakistan. And they don't know what lies ahead. And plus they have, they're trying to stabilize, for lack of a better term, the Xinjiang, and hence the suppression of the Uyghur community in northwestern China. That they're not, you know, there's a purpose, strategic purpose behind suppressing them, and which is to make sure that once they're pushing along, you know, into the heartland of Eurasia, that they don't have to turn around and worry about a domestic upheaval.
I'm glad you mentioned the Uyghurs. They're Turkic peoples. And the Turkic influence is obvious culturally for thousands of years. Turkey's keen on it, in fact. Is that an issue in Uzbekistan, in Kazakhstan, now that the Uyghur abuse is international? It's no longer a minor story.
Yes, of course, it's a issue of concern. But I think that the stands right now, even the largest ones, the Kazakhs and the Uzbeks, just don't have the wherewithal to actually do something about it. They are not there yet to where they can sort of influence Chinese behavior. They're just coming out of a, you know, it's been 30 years since the Soviet implosion. Now what we're looking at is a potential implosion of the Russian Federation. So they're more worried about what's happening in that part of the Eurasian landmass. And of course, right now China seems stable and strong. So there's not much they can do about the Uyghurs there. But this can become a potential fault line in the future if the Chinese Communist Party, faces problems in maintaining power at home.
And finally, Kamran, this looks to me to be an extremely rich land, very rich land with people with ambitions. Does anyone look at it as the possibility of growth from the point of view of growth? I understand we've been talking about empires, but all of them, the populations are growing if given their head. Are they regarded with respect around the world, or is this still, as you say, uncharted from most of the world's point of view?
I have to say, John, that unfortunately, this part of the world, Central Asia, the five stands, there's not a whole lot of interest in the world if you look at it compared to other parts of the world. The world just hasn't gotten around yet to realizing that the potential here. And, I guess it takes time. I mean, we're only 30 years out from the days of the Soviet Union. And so I think that over time, there will be growing interest around the world about Central Asia. But right now, it unfortunately seems to be low on the priority or the interest list of the outside world.
Kamran Bokhari, writing for Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.